It's like saying, should you drink more heavy metals like arsenic or lead in your food or in your tap water if you don't feel the effects? Well, this is how we should think about all exposure to toxins. And EMFs should be put in the same category as these other environmental toxins.
You're listening to the Untaming Podcast.
Rewild the Child.
Here is your host, Emily Giles.
Hello, I'm Emily, and you're listening to the Untaming Podcast. Today it is the new flower moon here in the Southern Hemisphere. I really enjoyed my last interview with Dr. Tom Kirsting on how to protect kids from device dependency. I hope you found it interesting too. Remember, if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review on iTunes or whichever streaming platform you use. It helps others to find the podcast. Next week, I chat with Sterna Suisa. She is a skilled communicator and has a lot of insight to offer about parenting through emotional connection. But today, I chat with Nicholas Pino on EMFs, electromagnetic frequencies. We covered a lot of aspects of EMFs, but one thing I ran out of time to ask him about was microwaves. So I thought I would share a couple of brief points to be aware of here. This comes from the Health Science website. I'll put the link to it in the show notes. I think the widespread belief is that microwaves are just like another type of oven, but in reality, the minerals, vitamins, and nutrients of all microwave food is reduced or altered so that the human body gets little or no benefit, or the human body absorbs altered compounds that cannot be broken down. And the effects of ingesting these byproducts created from microwaved foods, which the body cannot metabolize, are residual, as in they are long-term and they are permanent. Some of these effects are that male and female hormone production is altered, immune system deficiencies due to lymph gland and blood serum alterations, and an increase in cancerous cells in the blood. And this isn't even mentioning the effects to baby's milk being heated in a microwave or the effects of radiation from being near one while it's going. But like I said, I'll put the link to this in the show notes if you are curious about more information about microwaves and would like the references. But that's enough from me, so let's hear from Nick.
...35-year-old Nicholas Pino grew up in Quebec and has travelled extensively. Currently, he has been living in Spain for the last 2 weeks with his partner Genevieve and their 4.5-year-old son Elliot. Nick is known as the EMF guy. He wrote the book The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs, one of the best rated books on the topic of how EMFs impact human health and what to do about it. His professional background is in communications, copywriting, and journalism. Nick has been publishing his writings about health and topics he's passionate about for more than 10 years. Since 2016, Nick has become a passionate advocate for safe technologies and raising awareness around the EMF problem. Last night he had 7 hours of sleep, and he usually doesn't have breakfast, but today he had a shake. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I can't even remember how I first found you, but I've been following you for a few years now on social media and receiving your newsletters. And
nice.
I've even watched a few of the videos from your virtual conferences that you have presented. Mm-hmm. So needless to say, I've been very eager to chat with you about EMFs. I love the title of your book, The Non-Tinfoil Guide to EMFs, and I thought a good place for us to start would be for you to address that non-tinfoil aspect and give us like a brief rundown on what EMFs are.
Sure. Well, non-tinfoil, you know, a lot of people online, when I started researching the topic, I quickly found that the entire topic was kind of dismissed as some conspiracy theory, some fringe of the internet, and everyone who thinks that cell phone radiation is dangerous is probably someone without a brain and they just Yeah, you know, so it was put in a corner of the internet. And at the same time, I found several scientists that said that electromagnetic fields, EMFs, are very dangerous for our health. And these scientists are Nobel laureate like Dr. Deborah Davis, the late Dr. Martin Blank from Columbia University, people at Yale. I mean, these were top-level researchers, and their opinions based on decades of research. There's one of my colleagues now, Professor Holly Johansson, who's ex-Karolinska Institute. It's a place in Sweden with the basically where they awarded the largest amount of Nobel Prizes. So a lot of scientists from a lot of prestigious institutions said the same thing, essentially, that how we use technology currently is anything but safe. And that really shocked me, that disparity between people on the internet that say, no, 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 it's not serious, don't worry about it. You can. Some people went as far as like Elon Musk, for example, just went on Joe Rogan a few years ago, that very popular number one podcast in the world, and said, oh, no, you know, cell phone radiation. And obviously Elon Musk, for people who don't know, is also owner of the Starlink project and launching global satellites all around the planet. And what he said on Joe Rogan is, no, 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 you know, cell phone radiation, all that radiation is just internet BS, those who say there are health effects. So it's very bizarre, that disparity between what scientists say and what people with vested interests say, or people on the internet that are really convinced that the entire topic is not serious at all.
I guess one of the things that the people on the internet say is, you know, haven't EMFs just always occurred in nature?
Sure. Yeah, for sure. We've been exposed, we're constantly exposed to very high intensity EMF, if you take it that way, including the sunshine. And that's always the argument, like, oh, well, you know, the amount of energy emitted by your phone is a fraction of the amount of energy emitted by the sun and by sunshine just going to the beach. And that's true, but that's not the point. Our bodies recognize sunshine and do something with it. If you overdo it, you can burn your skin and probably increase your chances of melanoma. And that's arguable. We won't get into that. But when it comes to these frequencies that are from nature, our biology has evolved, if you believe in theory of evolution, for billions of years, from the first cells or mitochondria to human beings. We've evolved with these frequencies in harmony. The cell phone frequencies, they have not been around that much. They just started in the last few decades. Even electricity, for example, is 100 years old in the U.S. or in the countryside, where people have finally had electrification at the end of the 1950s. So it's not even 100 years old for some people being exposed to electricity or being near sources of electricity. So that's a fairly new phenomenon. And these frequencies have characteristics that are not compatible with how our biology operates. One of them, for example, is pulsation. If you are exposed by sun rays, these are non-pulse signal. They are continuous signals. Cell phones, for example, have pulsations that are quite erratic. A router, for example, pulses at 10 times per second. If you listen to it through an EMF meter, that's a small machine that can convert the electromagnetic pollution in the air in form of sound, you would hear it like as an assault rifle, and that's how it sounds. It sounds very chaotic. If you take a reader and you read the sun, for example, it would sound more harmonious. So you have some sort of chaos that's built into our telecommunications and the EMFs they emit. And why is that? Well, the first thing is they've been optimized for telecommunications and not for how compatible they are with our biology, based on the wrong belief that there would be no effects. And that's the big mistake. And since then, it looks like in the last several decades, it's been an entire industry that continues to want or would prefer to see the public and institutions and everyone else, the regulators, would continue to stick to the idea that there's no effect because it's very convenient. That way you can come up with new phones, with new Wi-Fi routers, you can install them wherever, and there's no effect, and everyone's happy, business is good. If there are effects, then business is bad, then we have to move antennas away, we have to accommodate, we have to figure out ways to make the phones connect better with a cell phone tower, but not expose the user too much. So that would be very inconvenient. And well, that's already happening in certain countries. I like the example. Let's start with that. Recently in France, cows won in court. That's true. The French, the French farmers, dairy farmers, won a court case that was very, very important, a landmark case where they saw a vast reduction in the productivity of their dairy cows and the output of milk that comes out of the cows because a 4G antenna, that's a cell phone tower, was installed near a farm, and they won in court. It was proven that there was causation between when the installation was set up and then the reduction in dairy production. Why is that? Well, the cows are not compatible with the 4G tower and they feel stressed. If they feel stressed, they don't produce as much milk. And a lot of activists and a lot of people like me who have been following EMLs for a while have argued, well, if it's bad for cows and the cows are winning in court, what does it mean for humans, right? So that's just an example. But in France, they are more stringent on even using Wi-Fi in school, for example. So is there health effects? Well, it depends on who you ask and how independent they are from industry.
Right. Could you tell us how much EMFs have changed in the past 100 years then?
Sure. Yeah, they've changed tremendously. And again, that's the argument. A lot of people could say, you know, we've always been exposed to signals from space that are in the microwave range, and that would fall in the same frequency range as your cell phone or Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, utility meters that are wireless, so-called smart meters, and even cell towers. And that's the microwave range. It's true that there are some microwaves, the space microwave background that it's called, that comes from space. And in fact, people who do astronomy read space that way and are able to figure out, okay, certain signals are emitted by distant galaxies and planets. And I don't know all the details, but it's one of the ways that we are able to identify characteristics of distant stars. But the levels of intensity of that microwave are basically a quintillion times lower than our current exposure from man-made sources. So quintillion times is 18 zeros after the one. It's a billion times increase in the last 100 years. So in other words, 100 years ago, our grandparents were exposed in their youth to levels of radiation that were 1 and 18 zeros times lower than us in the average city. And this radiation is still increasing vastly as we speak. So it's usually when you have an agent like a chemical or something that we think might be a stressor, and you increase it by a billion fold, there might be an effect. It's kind of logical to think maybe it's not the same thing as it used to be. And in just the last few decades, especially in the microwave range, there's been also a big increase because our use of technology has become much different. Before that, we were exposed, for example, to TV stations or radio stations, but as at a certain distance, unless you happen to live right next to it or it's installed on your rooftop somehow. But now we have things in our pocket called phones, and these guys emit a relatively high power, but right next to us. And really, the sources of EMFs that are closer to your body generally lead to the most detrimental effects, or the ones that are more immediate.
Right. So now, with regards to big things like, you know, the Wi-Fi, 3G, 4G, and 5G, I'd like to think that for such widespread global usage, they've been heavily tested for safety, right?
Well, that's the thing. The safety standards date back from science that was done in the 80s, and then these are even not technically standards, but guidelines, at least in the USA. And there are equivalents to that for Australia. I'm not aware of the situation in New Zealand in particular, but I can say that a lot of the G20 countries are amongst the most permissive when it comes to EMF radiation, especially US, Canada, and Australia, in that order, are among the three worst in the world. Even in China, in Russia, in most Asian countries, you find EMF guidelines that are, it ranges from slightly more stringent to extremely more stringent. So there's that, but it's very, very bizarre the way things have been allowed to go on, because even in the military, dating back from the 1950s after World War II, there was already a debate about radar operators, and radar range is in the microwave range. There's not much difference except from the power levels of radar are much higher, but if you have a radar, you could call it a cell tower. Eventually, you could make the jump and say, well, it's a Wi-Fi router or it's a cell phone. These are all technologies that emit signals that can be compared, although they can range, they can have a difference in intensity. Sometimes the effects might be similar. And radar operators had fertility problems. Some of them had tinnitus, for example, ringing in the ear. And there was something coined in this 1970 by Alan Frey, the Frey effect, F-R-E-Y, and that's established that some people have the microwave auditory syndrome, where they can hear radar. Or I would say that based on the studies on electromagnetic hypersensitivity, EHS, a lot of people can hear Wi-Fi and cell phones and cell phone towers. And a lot of people don't realize that when they go to the countryside in a very low radiation area, their problems get substantially, well, they tend to vanish. And that's for a lot of cases of tinnitus. Sometimes it might be causative, sometimes it might exacerbate people with hearing problems. But going back to the military, we already knew that there were some problems. But regardless of that, I think that the opportunity to launch an industry based on cell phone towers and telecommunications was so appealing that there was massive, massive pressure to not put stringent rules in place as we rolled out these technologies. And now the industry clings, it holds to this idea so hard, try to grasp to this idea that there's no health effect unless you are basically overheating everyone. And that's not what's happening. It's not like the cell phone towers or cell phones are boiling us or cooking an egg. That's a total internet myth, by the way. But The scientists argue that the effects are not about heat. They are about non-thermal effect, the more subtle effects that are happening at a cellular level. One of them might be just oxidative stress. And a lot of things cause oxidative stress. But the problem is when that stress at a cellular level is 24/7 without rest, then you get the equivalent of, I don't know, exercising 24/7, which is highly damaging, or staying in a sauna instead of 1 hour, which is already well enough, you stay 24 hours and you see, okay, am I getting the benefits? Of course not, because the stressor is a long-term stress. It becomes chronic stress. So it's really what this is about isn't even the question of just what is the effect for 6 or 30 minutes, the way that most cell phones are tested. It's what are the effects every day over a lifetime. And some of the effects are just seen after decades when we talk about, for example, increase in risk of brain cancer. And some of the effects are a little bit more immediate, although they might take a few months. For example, the reduction of fertility for men that have a cell phone in the pocket. And it's very well established at the moment that these effects are real. So what is maddening is really that scientific lag that's very well established between when there's scientific I hate calling it consensus because it's always arguable. Is there a scientific consensus or not? But when there's overwhelming evidence and a lot of top experts in their field that say, look, yes, there's an effect. There's a link between keeping a phone in your pocket and a loss of fertility as a man and quite possibly as a woman too. And we have that. We know that. And I would argue we've known that for a few decades now. And still, it's not policy. We don't have phones that turn off if they're in your pocket or reduce radiation if they're in the pocket. So we're not even taking that data and then making sure that users are protected. And that's what is very damning to me. It's just frustrating. And it means that we're just leaving it to the user to figure it out by themselves. And the industry is basically just waiting at the moment with hundreds of lawsuits around the world, many that they lost against people who claim they've had brain tumors from cell phones. At the moment in the US, there's tens. Maybe I don't know what the update is, but maybe in the future we're going to have hundreds of different claims against the industry for damage from cell phones. And people are starting to win these cases because they can prove causation. So it's really, at the moment, I see it as a big legal battle. And in the meantime, the public doesn't know it's happening. And in the meantime, we're just getting exposed to all these things that I think in a few decades, it will be established that these things were very unsafe. Mm-hmm. I would argue very dangerous to some extent. And then what we'll have at that point, as far as cell phone and Wi-Fi routers go, are things that are much safer. They will need the manufacturers to make them much safer, just like we needed at one point to make the cars much safer by using certain types of the belt, the safety belt at one point was a silly idea at the time of even my dad back in the days told me in Quebec we had the police officers drinking beer, no seat belt on, and just driving around like madmen. I'm like, oh my God, this is, it's almost as if you're talking to me about the medieval times. Okay. But no, it's just one generation ago that car safety was not a thing. They didn't realize how hazardous it was to just take a car, drink and drive, and just go around with no seatbelt. Now it's perceived, thank God, as something very dangerous, because it is. And we know that you can easily kill yourself if you get in an accident, even with everything that we put in place for car safety. The problem at the moment is, with technology, we're still in the dark ages. We're still going with higher and higher power. We're rolling from 3G, which is a third generation of cellular networks. We're going to 4G, 5G, 6G has been in the works for years. They're talking about 7G, 8G. Mm. There's no stopping them because at the moment it's so permissive that, okay, well, I guess we'll just come up with new exciting stuff and make a bunch of trillions unless the regulators are able to stop them or the market demands safer technologies. It's probably both. Or the lawsuits cost so much that business is not good. But I don't think this is what is being done in most industries. Just look at Volkswagen, for example. Yeah, for people who don't know, they kind of invented data, and some people inside the company kind of twisted data around how environmentally friendly their cars were. But secretly, they also had a few billion dollars that were just there in reserve, maybe invested in, I don't know how much how you invest billions of dollars. It's just sitting there in case you need payouts because you know you're committing fraud. Well, the cell phone industries and all the big names have reserves like this. I'm pretty convinced that this is a little bit speculative on my end, but what we know is they're telling their investors for years that these lawsuits are coming. So they're already, I think since the early 2000s, they said, among the risks in our industry, it's if people start suing us over these health effects. But don't worry, you know, we know it's part of the risk and it's like the top risk. And they're also self-insured. There's not one reinsuring company like Swiss Re or the Lloyd's of London, for example, and these are the two top reinsurers on the planet. They refuse to insure the cell phone companies and the tech companies. What does that tell you? Well, if you read the reports from Swiss Re and Lloyd's of London from now almost two decades ago, they said it's not a question of if cell phone radiation is damaging people. It's a question of when the public will wake up and all the lawsuits will come. This industry is completely unsustainable and potentially unsolvable. And this is what they said decades ago. So it's a bunch of different hints that things will be changing in our time. My frustration with it is that it means in the meantime, people are getting that damage. And I hate that. I hate that because I saw that with different things. In my time, I saw trans fats becoming banned. And I'm very young. I'll turn 35, as you said. I saw different sweeteners being banned or restricted in Canada. And then some of them are still allowed in the US, but not in Europe. And I realized that tap water is so unregulated, and I saw Flint, Michigan happen in the US with lead in tap water. And then I realized that it's going on in Montreal. So that's my background, is a frustration with health, public health authorities that maybe they're trying their best, but they're failing at really protecting the public because it takes decades until we figure stuff out. So I want things to be faster, and I want users to know that there are safer ways to use technology now in a more conscientious way. And that way you're not sorry in 30 years when you realize, I could have had a kid, but maybe my cell phone was in my pocket and that's why me and my wife couldn't conceive. Or worse, some people claim that they've had a brain tumor and some have died. And yeah, some people might say, oh, it was not causative or it was, but let's leave the judge take care of that, or people that are their doctors and say, yes, it's a pure causation in many cases. So yeah, it's just very, very sad that we're always going backwards, rolling technologies first and then kind of shooting first, asking questions later kind of thing.
Yes. Now, just going back to what you said before about how the dangers come from the sources closest to our bodies. And you also mentioned Elon Musk's Starlink internet connection. Yep. So I'm very curious about the effects of that with all the thousands of satellites floating above our heads.
Yeah, it's Starlink is a problem on multiple fronts. And I would say as far as EMF radiation goes, it's nothing good to add more global radiation around the planet. If we look at the health effects that we know of, including the effects on nature, it's not just about human beings. It's also about what human beings depend on to be able to survive on that planet, including, for example, pollinators, including the American honeybee or other known pollinators. There's huge indications in science at the moment, including science done by Professor Holly Johansson from Sweden that I've mentioned previously, that pollinators are greatly impacted by that radiation. And that even EMF radiation may be combined with chemicals that we use in honeybees, or maybe just global use of certain pesticides, or whether it's glyphosate or other things. They're both responsible or partially responsible for the bee colony collapse disorder. So that big question mark that researchers have on their forehead at the moment is, why is it that we're losing 90%+ of pollinators in a few decades? Mm-hmm. And well, they're really clueless. Some of them have indications, maybe it's a chemical, but in certain spots on the planet, there's no chemicals and the same thing is still happening. But what there is globally is cell phone towers and Wi-Fi routers and things like that. If you look at studies, the more radiation that you add, if you add a cell phone tower to inside a beehive, for example, in certain situations, the bees never come back. Because is it that they lose their way because their inner sense of geolocation is disrupted by that radiation? That might be it. Or that might just be that they perceive that radiation as a threat. And bees use their inner sense, their inner GPS, basically, that they have inside their body to be able to find paths, to find flowers, find their way back to the beehive, and also just know where north is. And that's something we're seeing also in migratory birds. So that's a long way to say that if you add global electropollution in space on top of everything we've already installed, is just a silly idea. We don't need more. And do we really need an internet service that is global? The answer is probably not. We don't need it. And it's just a question of it's creating a new offer for the public that doesn't need it, really. Also, there's a question, and some environmentalists are starting to wake up, but most are still asleep on the job when it comes to the satellite, the global satellite projects such as Starlink, or there's almost 100 other projects that might be going on at the same time. So it's not just Elon Musk. It's OneWeb and Google and Facebook and all the billionaires and trillionaires out there are all invested in some way or another with one global internet project because it's hype. It's something cool these days to invest in those. You know, they think it might be the future. What they don't account for and what we barely know about is the environmental cost in pollution of launching these satellites. Each time you launch a satellite, you need a rocket. That rocket burns fuel, very dirty fuel, and we have not solved that problem. I saw modelizations that were done just a few years back from people that are experts at, let's say, the environmental cost of launching rockets, and they argued that very quickly the rocket launches alone would greatly surpass the entire airline industry in global pollution.
Wow.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg. So I find it, again, very frustrating that you have a few billionaires that wake up a morning and maybe they had this dream when they were a kid to go in space and whatnot. So they have all these sorts of ideas and they say, oh, well, let's launch a global internet project. So they go to the FCC in the US and the Federal Communication Commissions. They ask, please, can we launch rockets? And the FCC says, yes, you can launch thousands of rockets. These rockets are launched and they put satellites in space. And these satellites, at one point around their journey around the Earth, go over certain countries that have restrictive laws when it comes to light pollution, such as Italy, for example. And now these satellites are hovering over Italy and they breach the Italian law for how much light pollution you can have, because all the light that is emitted by Italy, the Italians as an entire country, is being reflected back from by these satellites. So it's causing a major problem. So the Italians are not happy about it. And they ask the FCC, why did you allow the launch of these satellites? And the FCC said, well, we don't have jurisdiction outside the US, so it's not our problem. So they're allowed to launch from the U.S. And as the second that the satellites leave the U.S. or not over the U.S., there's no one who takes care of the laws. And I'm not just saying things randomly. There's a group of attorneys that I'm connected with called BBILAN.org. I got to find the exact acronym here, that the Broadband International Legal Action Network. It's a bit of a mouthful, but basically these are international attorneys that have projects to stop these satellites, and they explain all these things, how the satellites breach so many international laws around pollution, light pollution, space junk. So what I perceive these projects to be is just the very worst of putting ideas and, I don't know, I would say billionaire wet dreams forward rather than what would benefit humanity. It's really the worst example that I'm seeing. And the problem, as far as the public reaction to that goes, is the public is not seeing that. What they're seeing is excitement. We're in the future. There's going to be internet everywhere, which is in itself a pretty decent idea when you say every human being is connected. People in the middle of the desert that are in tribes can have access to the Library of Alexandria on their phone. Okay, fine. Yeah, I like these ideas. But have we figured out, have we thought about this long and hard before? The answer is no. They've not looked at environmental impact. They've done none of that. So I really thought that at one point humanity would learn, but we're not, I guess, I'm all for free market and these kind of ideas, but the level of stupidity that really is displayed is incredible. Or not initially stupidity, because I think even Elon Musk is a pretty intelligent guy, but carelessness. Ooh. And that might be some of their blind spots, but it's just, yeah, I'm very, very sad that this is happening. So we need to oppose these projects, focus on safer technologies. We have so much work to do to just make cell phones safer and cell towers than what we have, and rethink the infrastructure with more wired solutions, reduce the levels, maybe make them more biocompatible, kind of make the signals more compatible with our biology. But we're not even there yet. And now they're thinking about launching thousands of satellites in space. It just seems so silly when you look at the overall problem. So since I wrote my book years ago, this is the kind of situation I've been facing, where I look at things, at that train wreck just becoming worse and worse and worse, and it's a bit discouraging. But at the same time, you know, there are also new tech companies that are trying to go a little bit healthier, and I see that the discussion is starting to move a little bit. So it's gonna take a while, but please ask another question. I know I've been rambling for so much time, but that's just my entire thought about satellites. It's just, it's a very sad state of affairs.
It is, yes. Thank you. So I think I first really learned about EMFs from a listener of this podcast who reached out about 3 years ago to tell me about her young daughter who had, you know, lived a very healthy lifestyle, organic food, breastfeeding for over 3 years, lots of time outside, but was then diagnosed, I think at the age of about 4, with brain cancer. And I'll say straight out that she survived and completely finished all her treatment over 2 years ago. But they eventually found out that the dominant cause of her cancer was due to faulty wiring, I think possibly from a refrigerator in the bedroom wall, causing extremely high EMF levels right next to where her daughter slept. Now, there are a lot of things we could touch on here, but could we talk about EMFs and sleep environments?
Yep, sure. What she was exposed to is specifically a magnetic field. And, you know, cell phone radiation, and so that's, let's say, the microwaves have been classified a class 2B carcinogen by the WHO IARC. So that's International Agency for Research on Cancer. And that was in 2011. But prior to that, in 2002 and 2003, the extremely low frequency fields, including magnetic fields from high voltage power lines, were also classified as a class 2B carcinogen because they've been shown to potentially increase risks of leukemia in children who live near these power lines. So in the case of that little girl, she was not initially living near a power line, but the back of a fridge has an extremely strong motor, and just being exposed to the back of a fridge and having your head in that bubble of a magnetic field that can go out a few feet from the motor can be enough to cause detrimental health effects, including cancer. And I would argue that's highly dangerous to sleep in that environment. But the problem is, how do you know, right? So it's very it's very difficult. The first thing that I would do is not initially worry about the back of a fridge, but just worry about what's in your bedroom. Whether we're talking about anything that's plugged into the walls, such as an alarm clock or a lamp, but also your phone that is charging there. Some people have everything. All these machines are Bluetooth also. So there's many, many types of signals that might interfere with your sleep. And one of the mechanisms might be that just like visible light, the invisible EMFs, such as the ones emitted by just a cell phone that's on your bedstand, might interfere with your release or production of melatonin, which is a very important sleep hormone, but also one of the most important antioxidants in the body. So is it basically suppressing melatonin, and that is why it's a carcinogen? That's another discussion, but some researchers think that this is the case. So the first thing to do is to move these things away from your pillow. And it doesn't take much, but if you charge your phone under your pillow, or even if you don't charge it, you just put it under your pillow, it's a very bad idea because that proximity is a problem. If you put it as far away as possible, the other side of the room, then you're in a much better place. I prefer to tell people to put it on airplane mode or completely turn it off at night. Or if they have to have their cell phone, let's say they have teenage kids and the teenage kids are starting to go out at night, and you want to be on call in case go pick me up or there's an emergency or something, put it in the next room and maximum ringer. So that way you know you're going to hear it in case of emergency, but not in your bedroom. Your bedroom should be as clean from these EMFs as possible. And when it comes to just a regular alarm clock, the alarm clock itself can have a small magnetic field around it. So move it to arm's length from your pillow. So if you have like a small table near your bed, you try to move it away a little bit. Sometimes it's not as pleasing aesthetically. I know some people love the design of their bedroom, but if you want an alarm clock that is a little bit closer to you, opt for one that is battery powered rather than plugged into a wall outlet. And these usually are less of a problem. But again, just look at the different things that you have plugged in. I know that most people have a Bluetooth alarm clock because, I don't know, they can connect their phone on there. I don't like that because a lot of these technologies are so poorly built or so stupidly built, I should say, that they emit Bluetooth signals 24/7. And I've tested that with EMF meters. You go near the machine, the alarm clock, and it's always looking for a phone. And it's not even, you don't even have to touch the Bluetooth button for it to look for a phone. It's just always that way. So it's wasting away your electricity, and then it's emitting these signals that can be quite strong near your face all night. So it's just stupid. I would replace that with something non-Bluetooth. So overall, in the bedroom, it's just a matter of getting these things as far away from your pillow as possible. When it comes to the back of a fridge and things like that, it's a bit tricky because a lot of people don't know the configuration of their neighbor's apartment if they are in condos or in apartments. So that's why I think, generally speaking, it's a good idea, especially if you have poor sleep or if someone in your family has some sort of health issue or especially sleep quality, I would consider having a building biologist or EMF mitigation specialist come over to your home. And there are different building biologists all around the world. In most countries, there are. I know one that is operating in Australia. And in New Zealand, there should be a few as well. There's people from GeoVital. VITAL, GeoVital Academy, is based in Austria, and they also train GeoVital practitioners that are slightly different from building biology, but they have their merits as well. So there are several types of EMF professionals that can come to your home and take readings, and then they would have detected the back of the fridge. They would have said, oh my God, what is this big bubble of magnetic fields? Because usually in a home, you might get, let's say, to make it very simple, levels of 0.5 milligauss, and that's a unit of radiation for magnetic fields. And the back of the fridge might emit several hundreds milligauss. So very rapidly, just even with an amateur level meter, you would have detected this problem. And for sure, you don't want to sleep in that. We even have many, many studies of people using industry machines or different machines that emit large levels of magnetic fields, and how people are impacted and they have these work-related cancers or risks. And this, I'd argue that most of the science that is the most solid around magnetic field and the detrimental health effects are in people who work near these sources of magnetic fields, and it's not looking good. So if you sleep in them, and if you're 4 years old or 2 years old or just a baby, it's definitely not conclusive to good health. Especially in the youth, it's even more damaging because their brains are still forming, and even the nervous system is not mature. It won't be mature before around 25 years old. So it's really concerning. It should be a priority, the sleep environment of your kids, and to just remove these sources as much as possible. And I'll add a note in there for the baby monitors. They should be as far away from the kid as possible. And I did use them sparingly when my kid was younger. I didn't want to use them, but it's true that in certain situations, it's hard to do without if you're completely outside the home, doing a barbecue and the kid is sleeping inside. There's no way you're going to hear the kid. It's very convenient, but you don't put it in the crib. That's just a choking hazard and just ridiculous, but some people still do it because they absolutely want to hear the kid. You don't put it next to the crib, you put it the other side of the room, and most monitors will pick up the sounds just right. And you can test it with a partner or someone from your family and just scream, I guess, do random sounds and see if it picks up. But usually it picks up the slightest sound. So you don't need that proximity, and then creating that distance will tremendously reduce how much the kid is being impacted by this one source. So alternatively, of course, you can have wired solutions for that baby monitor if that's something you want permanently in your home or for a few years, maybe for the first 3 years of your kid's life or for your next kids. You can have wired or even video cameras if that's your thing, and it can be wired in with an Ethernet cable. And that's something a lot of people forget, but in most industries, if you go in office environments, you still have computers that are wired in because they're not like 200 different computers on the same Wi-Fi. Usually they are on the hard wired solution, and it still works. You can hire an IT company and kind of have your miniature network of maybe 8 to 12 different plugs around the home. You can have the home office. You can have one for your TV if you like a TV that can connect directly to Netflix. Maybe it's a like Samsung Connect or whatever. There are so many different machines now. You can have, if you have an Apple TV or Roku or whatever you use as a digital multimedia player, you can have that connected. You can even have a plug in your living room, like I have back in Montreal, where at the end of an Ethernet plug, I have a converter Ethernet to Apple Lightning. And it means that I can wire in my phone. So in the morning, if I have my cup of coffee and show my kid a few things on the computer, and maybe sometimes these days we talk about Spartan races because I do them and he's interested. I want to see that video, Daddy. Okay, well, we're going to go wired. So I'm not even connecting to the cellular network. I'm not connecting to Bluetooth, and I'm not connecting to Wi-Fi. I'm connecting to the wire. So there's virtually no radiation, and we can watch things very close to the screen like most people do and not have that radiation. And that's really these opportunities that we have throughout the day to not be exposed are really something that's going to compound over time. Because when it comes to EMFs, people need to understand that it's the overall cumulative exposure that matters so much. If you are exposed to the back of a fridge for most of your life as a kid, because let's say you sleep there, So at first you sleep almost 24 hours a day as a very, very young baby. Then maybe you sleep 20, you sleep 18, but you're always exposed in those hundreds of milligauss magnetic field. It's highly problematic. If on the other hand, you happen to go through these machines that are magnetic field based at the airport as a scanner, and you pass through them in a split second, you are exposed to something that is detrimental, I would argue, to the human body, but it's for a split second. You don't stay in that machine to sleep. So there's a question of dosage of radiation, just like with nuclear radiation. The problem with EMLs and the way we're using them is that we don't know what the safe dose is. Some scientists argue there's no safe dose because we have not done the studies to really know what is or what would be to save those, but it's way lower than what we're exposed to at the moment. And if we had a safe dose, our technology would probably not work. Like your cell phone would have to emit levels that are, I don't know, several thousand times lower, and maybe connectivity wouldn't be as good. So we have a bit of a dilemma here moving forward, is how are we going to keep the infrastructure, or can we keep the infrastructure and make it safe for users? And that question is still unclear, but I think things will get better as we go. But for the moment, you have these machines, the baby monitors and the Wi-Fi router and all these things. You got to be respectfully prudent around these machines and just put them as far away as possible and find these steps that I'm trying to teach the public to minimize their impact in your life while we're waiting for the science to kind of battle itself out.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned baby monitors and charging phones, alarm clocks, those sort of things. And since you said, you know, we spend such a long time sleeping, and what you said about the cumulative effects, I'm thinking of other things that, you know, like electric blankets or smart beds or smart watches that people typically keep on them all the time when they're sleeping or during the day. So these are all having that constant cumulative effect, right?
Yes, for sure. So I'm not a fan necessarily of things that are plugged in, like the sleep blanket. Unfortunately, a lot of them are very poorly conceived. So what they're going to expose you to, especially, is it could be these magnetic fields, but it could be also just electrical fields that are another type of EMF. It's just increasing how much voltage, how much electricity is running to your body at night. And even if you have 3, 4, 5 volts running to your body, that's the equivalent of a few of these small AAA batteries. It's not enough to give you an electric shock, of course. And for most people, they wouldn't feel anything. But the very subtle effect is a stress effect. A stress effect is the opposite of sleep. It's the opposite of calming down your nervous system. It's keeping your nervous system in that sympathetic mode and not parasympathetic, which is the rest and digest mode. So it's really what is found by building biologists and also doctors that are aware of EMFs that recommend this to their patients, is that when you minimize these EMFs, and let's say maybe the sleep blanket, you could plug it in and then unplug it as you go to sleep. So not be actively, let's say, using electricity on your body. It's just that sleep quality increases. For most people, that's true. So it's just a question of lowering cumulative exposure. And this is what I also tell athletes that reach out to me. And a lot of them are extremely health conscious. They come across my work and they're happy, and then they hate me at the same time. I get that a lot. They say, well, okay, it's very inconvenient because I use these Bluetooth gadgets that are so important to me. I've got the Bluetooth chest strap that's emitting Bluetooth right on my heart. I've got my smartwatch. I've got this and that. And I tell them, you know, it's all a matter of quantity. If you use a chest strap for a few hours per week and you feel okay with it, you want to take that risk, that's fine. What I would like to see is more and more trackers for athletes that can store the data locally inside the machine and not have to send that data to a phone constantly. That's the problem with the technology and how it's built, is that the engineering behind these machines takes into account that there's no health effect. So they don't try to minimize the amount of Bluetooth. They don't mind for it. It's just, okay, well, what's going to be the most convenient way to create that machine? Let's do it. Let's launch it. And we care about connectivity. We care about the sensors and this and that. They don't care about low radiation. And that's really the problem. So the smartwatches and the sleep tracker devices, the only one that I recommend at the moment is called the Oura Ring, O-U-R-A. And that's because this ring that is kind of a smart ring can be put on airplane mode. So in other words, it tracks your sleep passively, but without having to be connected to Bluetooth, because it stores the data locally inside the ring, which is very, very good design to me. And then in the morning, I can put it on the charger and connect it via Bluetooth to my phone, dump the data, sync the data to my phone. I see my sleep quality and whatnot. I put it back on airplane mode. So when it's on my body, it's not emitting anything because it does not need to. If I wanted to get my tracking in real time, I could do that. But I don't see the use for it. It would just be an extra stress to my life, I think. So these machines, I hope that they come to the market. There are some trackers, I've been told, that certain versions of Apple Watches that are more recent could be used in airplane mode most of the time. So I think that manufacturers, some of them, will start seeing a bit of demand from the market. So I wouldn't be as concerned about the smart gear in the future. But for the moment, it's still very EMF heavy, including those darn headphones that are Bluetooth. And if we know that a cell phone to the ear is a problem and can increase risk of brain cancer, what can the headphones in the ear, even closer to the brain, what can it do? And the question is, well, we don't know exactly, because most of the data is on phones, and most of the data is on cohorts of people that have been using older technologies, because this is how epidemiology works. We study the past. We study people who died, unfortunately, and then say, okay, well, what can we learn from these lessons? So is it okay to use the Bluetooth headphones 24/7, or not 24/7, obviously, although you would be surprised of how much people are using them. Some of them just use them as a fashion statement, and they don't even listen to anything, but they have it in the ear all the time. And some people fall asleep with them, just listening to some meditation track. So for some people, it's just 20 hours per day or 16 hours per day. It's quite tremendous how much they're exposed. So I cannot call them safe. And that's just, I hate to say that, because some people think they're so convenient, they're so cool. But maybe, you know, if you can reduce how many hours you're using them during every day, then you're doing good already, reducing your exposure. So maybe when you're at your desktop computer, you decide to have the wired headphones because you're not moving around. And maybe if you go jogging or cycling, you still have your Bluetooth ones. And that's okay. I'm not here to judge, but I'm just saying these are individual risks, and at least you should know what you're getting into. So if you get headaches, or you feel like there's a burning sensation in the ear, or I don't know, or if you don't want those risks of maybe brain cancer or anything else, well, you consider reducing your exposure or just scrapping the Bluetooth stuff altogether.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned a couple of times about putting devices on airplane mode. So yeah, I'd like to know what that effect is. Is it completely removing EMFs when you put, say, a mobile phone on airplane mode?
Almost entirely. It's getting more and more complicated as technology evolves, because now you can, for a few years now, you can be on airplane mode, for example, which would cut down the cellular network, such as the connectivity with the 3G or 4G or 5G tower. But you can also be on airplane mode and then open Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. right? You have these multiple antennas in a smartphone. So the real answer is you put on airplane mode, which cuts down the cellular network, and you also want to be sure that the Bluetooth icon is crossed off and says, okay, Bluetooth is off, and also Wi-Fi is off. So there are multiple concerns there. So it's a bit complicated, but once you have an EMF meter, it kind of helps see, is my phone still emitting? There's also now Apple is coming up with the amazingly stupid ideas, but again, that's my vision is the EMF angle. Maybe for users they say, no, it's not stupid, it's so exciting. Yeah, because they're increasing the power and the functionality of the GPS version, and now even on airplane mode it's sending a kind of, if I understood it correctly, I don't know when that technology has started, maybe the iPhone 11, I think, so very recently. But now on airplane mode, there's even a very, very low level signal of Bluetooth that is being emitted. So that's quite a shame. And my recommendations that I did in my book, I think that for my future book, they will change to turn off your phone altogether or put it in another room, because even airplane mode, manufacturers are saying, oh, you know, well, on the airplane, it's not going to interfere with anything if we have a little bit of Bluetooth. And maybe that's true. So the airplane mode, what does it mean? It changes with time. And that's quite frustrating. It makes it that I have new content to create for my YouTube channel, but I'm not happy about it. It's a bit complicated, but generally speaking, if you have an EMF meter, even if it's a very basic one, you can just open the machine and look, is my phone emitting something? And you would be surprised. Your computer could be emitting Bluetooth if you forgot to click that little Bluetooth icon and turn it off. And these things are, these sources of hidden EMFs are everywhere. When you start having a meter going around kind of ghost hunting and looking a little bit bizarre to your spouse probably at first, but it gives you really a tool to be able to tell if things are emitting these needless signals.
Yeah. I think you've just answered my next question, which was about older smartphones radiate more or less EMFs. I mean, I'm talking about my own phone is an iPhone 4. So I was like, I'm assuming it's got less, emitting less EMFs than, like the iPhone 10 or 11.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it's true that generally speaking, the new phones are becoming worse and worse. So for example, just the fact that you may be able to connect to a 5G network, generally speaking, the 5G signals might be even more harmful. And we don't know that. That's a bit speculative at the moment. But the way that the signal is more and more complicated with newer technologies make it so that generally speaking, these signals per unit of radiation are even more stressful to a cell or mitochondria. So that's generally what's been happening because of the way it's pulsed, because of the modulation pattern. So there's all sorts of characteristics that the signal has that makes it even more chaotic. So it connects better to the antenna, and they use all sorts of new electrical engineering techniques to make it connect even better. So your phone is faster, more exciting, but there's a cost to that to biology. And of course, they say, continue saying, no, there's no health effect. So if you stick with the technology that's a bit older, it doesn't make it safe by any means, because most of the brain cancer data we had was 2G and 3G, right? And that's the old phones. Yeah. Even the number one study that I think was the most important in the last year, the National Toxicology Program in the US, NTP, came out with a rat and mice study after years and years and years of setting it up and reviewing the results. And they said there's clear evidence that the cell phone technology is a carcinogen. Clear evidence. That's the highest possible level of certainty after days of peer reviews, including engineers and industry people. So it's really undeniable. But that was 2G and 3G data and technology that was used. So it's good that we declare that the old stuff that no one uses anymore was dangerous. That's basically what they declared, right? So there's no reason to think that any of the newer stuff that is, generally speaking, high power, and then even more complicated signals that can be more chaotic, there's no reason to think that they're any safer. There's a lot of reasons to think that they're worse. So that being said, what's problematic about, I used to be telling people, yeah, just keep your phone, keep your phone, keep your phone. After that, I have my friends in internet security that said, yeah, that's kind of silly, because now if you never update your OS and your apps, if you have, you keep having a smartphone that's extremely deprecated, and let's say you never want to do the updates because it's going to make things worse or whatever, you can have more risks of on the internet security side. So I'm a little bit torn between these two ideas now, and I just tell people, even if you get the latest phone, you should, and you should not change the way you're using it. You should use it the way that I've been trying to teach people, that I've learned myself from others behind me, from giants, the scientists and the EMF mitigation specialists that I've learned from. I'm not coming up with any of that stuff, I have to say. So I learned everything from them. I'm just trying to relay that to the public. So you should put your phone on airplane mode or turn it off completely if it's in your pocket. Or if you carry it, you can carry it in the bag or just with a certain distance from your body. Especially if it's for hours, for multiple hours every single day. For me, if I take it and put it in my pocket 15 minutes, maybe it's not a big deal. But for someone who works and their entire life they have a phone in their pocket, then the exposure is tremendously high and the risk is correlative to that. So I would say, regardless of what phone version you have to follow the same habits. I do not advocate or recommend people to put a phone to their ear. I recommend to use, if there's no one around and it won't be too annoying, use the speakerphone option and just hold your phone in your hand at a distance, or use just wired headsets, and it's going to reduce your exposure tremendously.
Yeah. Now, I know that I personally am sensitive to EMFs. Typically after about half an hour or so in a space with high EMF technologies, I start to get a headache, have a lot of difficulty concentrating, and start to become quite emotional and lethargic. My question is, do EMFs still affect everybody, even if only some people physically experience these similar reactions?
Yes, there's vast indications that on a cellular level, EMF is a stress regardless of symptomology. So you have certain people who feel the effects and they feel fatigued, or for me, it used to be brain fog. But you see, after a few years of improving my health, I would say it's been a long while since I've been brain fogged at all. And it took a flight to Paris a month ago to really brain fog, bad attitude, anxiety, and then I went on Wi-Fi and it got worse. But I was in a very bad spot, just jet lagged and just felt lousy. And usually when I'm just my regular baseline health these days, I don't have these symptoms anymore, which is dangerous in a sense, because I can fall into thinking, oh, well, now I can just use Wi-Fi. You know, I don't have these effects. Well, no, it's taking a toll on your entire body. It's like saying, should you drink more heavy metals like arsenic or lead in your food or in your tap water if you don't feel the effects? Well, right? It's kind of silly putting it that way, but this is how we should think about all exposure to toxins. And EMFs should be put in the same category as these other environmental toxins. They're not a nutrient. EMF is not a nutrient. It's not bringing something to our body. It's not energizing the body. It's not nourishing the body. So we should go with the ELARA principle, as low as reasonably achievable. And that's a principle that is recommended for nuclear radiation, which is quite obviously very dangerous in small doses. But for when it comes to EMFs, if you can go to the minimum possible exposure, it's always better. So is it better to cut down exposure even further? Yes. Is it extremely dangerous if I expose myself to a phone for 3 minutes? I don't know. Probably not, to be quite honest, because we have not seen people drop dead after a 3-minute call, or else the technology would have failed back in the 90s or 80s when it was first launched. So obviously there's no extremely short-term effects, although we might be surprised that some people are so sensitive, or they've grown or become so sensitive, that now they can cannot even fathom or tolerate using a phone on the ear for 3 minutes. So it really varies from person to person. And if someone tells you, I'm sensitive to that technology and I feel unwell just having a phone near me, believe them before saying, oh, no, that's impossible. Because the degree of sensitivity that people can reach is beyond comprehension. And when people reach that degree of sensitivity, the hard thing is recovery is so difficult. You have to do a bunch of things to heal your biology, but also get away from the signals. But where do you go in today's society? And with global satellites, right, it's becoming increasingly difficult to avoid the agent for which you are now intolerant, or we could even say allergic, although it's probably not the right biomedical term. I would say if you're allergic to something and people spray it in your face almost 24/7, how and when will you get better? It will be rough. It will be difficult. So that's the equivalent. And these people have an extreme degree of sensitivity, and many of them follow my work, and it's difficult. It's difficult because there are not a lot of answers. There are doctors specialized in environmental medicine throughout the world that know how to help these people, but the treatments and protocols are not cheap and are not easy. And just traveling to a doctor like this might be too much for these sensitive individuals. So sometimes they're pretty much stuck. And this is another sad part of my work, is just some people have become extremely sensitive to that technology, and they cannot live as with others who have embraced that technology, basically.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, to make things a bit more positive after we've talked about, you know, all these scary things, can you tell us about some of these things that we can do to improve our resilience to EMFs?
Yes, resilience to EMFs really comes down to everything you can do to make yourself stronger. And that's quite large, but I would say just eating real food, for example, an antioxidant-rich diet is, generally speaking, it could lead to an improved resilience to EMFs. Anything that can help you handle stress more will help you handle EMFs more, including proper sleep, including techniques or strategies that you might use to calm down your nervous system. A lot of people that have extreme degrees of sensitivity have to use some sort of practice like meditation, breath work, yoga, tai chi, qigong, for example, to get better, because part of it is avoiding exposure. Part of it might be improving your nutrient status by seeing a doctor, doing some testing, and you improve different aspects of your health. But there's always something that remains, and is that feeling that everything around you is there to kill you. So if you have all that stress from technology, ironically, maybe this is what this very podcast has been causing in your body. So maybe you'll need some breath work afterwards. And that's a common reaction. That's something that's been on my mind for years. Also, when you introduce people to something that's all around us and that's a stressor, just the fact that they now realize it's a stressor stresses them further. So how can we combat that? Well, I guess it's just after the initial shock, there's a sort of period where you eventually become okay with it, and you become, I guess, a little bit calmer about it, then say, okay, well, I'm going to control what I can control, and then I'm going to just ignore what I can't. So if you go buy a cell phone tower, like I used to in Montreal a few years ago, and every time you're like, oh, this is unacceptable, that tower is burning us, boiling us, killing us, like I see a lot of activists doing, quite unfortunately. And I don't blame them for being angry. It's just that if you live that way, you create a lot of needless stress on top of the reality, the stress that is caused by the tower itself. And I used to do that. I used to be angry at the tower, angry at the telecoms and this and that. And I kind of, it took a few years after writing my book to not be in that trauma space anymore. So it's like you got to learn about the topic, do what you can, and then you got to almost forget about the topic a little bit, or else you're obsessed with toxins, right? So
yeah,
there's a psychological game that we have to, I think, go through, and we have eventually to elevate ourselves and say, okay, well, yes, maybe we live on in a fairly toxic world. Yes, there's chronic disease, and a lot of people are dying needlessly, and it's pretty horrible when you read all that information and take it in globally. Some things are horrible in this world, but there's also, then you gotta close this part or let it aside for a moment, and then also find your bliss in the middle of a very imperfect world. But I think it's the same combat that's always been the case for environmentalists or people who want to stop all wars. Every time you look at news of, oh, well, I'm someone who deeply cares about humanity, and my goal in life is to stop all wars, but now there's this war with Ukraine, and I feel sad every single day. Well, yes, there's part of you that can be sad about the situation, but if it makes your life miserable, it's almost your choice to be miserable. It's suffering. So I guess it's a bit tricky when it comes to all these topics, and it is a bit of a doom and gloom topic, but what you can do and what you should do, I think, is just be mindful of your reaction to these things and then don't obsess over it. Most of my education that I've been trying to add on top of my books, such as my courses or membership, it's all things where I want to be very down to earth about it all. Not say, okay, not be in that angry state anymore. Just be very practical about it. What can you do? And then, okay, all the other things that you cannot control, don't focus on them. And that's a huge part of learning to be happy, even if you're aware of a lot of things that aren't right in this world.
Yeah. And now, does something like grounding help, like getting free electrons from being close
yes.
to the ground as often as possible? Yeah.
Yes. Especially in nature. I would say swimming in a lake, in the sea, in a river is tremendous because the grounding effect is even higher, especially in the sea because of the salt water. But just being barefoot on the earth is a practice, earthing or grounding, that will, let's say, normalize your body's bioelectrical systems. And that's probably the main mechanism. So you have some sort of bodily confusion when you're exposed to a lot of outside frequencies that are chaotic. And when you reconnect to natural frequencies, you go in nature, you ground yourself barefoot, and then you have some sunshine on your skin, you're bathed in natural frequencies. And it will bring back some of that harmony to your biology. So just overall, doing things that bring you back to nature is not just a hippie idea. It's also a very good strategy to mitigate our unnatural environment. And yes. if it needs to be every weekend, so be it. If you can go to a park, even if you're in the middle of New York or Auckland or, I don't know, Montreal, find something that is nature. Even if it's just a small twig, and touch the twig and say, oh, yes, I'm in a forest. You know, just we are in very unnatural environments, and each time you get closer to nature, you will see a difference. And people that are sensitive, for them, it's really one of the remedies for them is going back to nature and natural frequencies.
Fantastic. Great. Now, I haven't managed to get my hands on your book yet, but I presume a lot of what we've talked about today and much more is covered in depth in your book?
Yeah, it's all in there. Yeah. It's still very relevant, although it's a few years old. And then I also have a lot more on my website, theemfguy.com. I have a course that I've built now 2 years ago that is the practical application of everything in my book, more in depth, room by room, how to actually do it and remove or reduce EMFs. And in that course, I didn't pack a lot of science like in the book because it's really just the practical aspects. I have other things such as now a membership where people can ask questions every month called the EMF Circle. And yeah, I'm still working on continued education and trying to bring awareness to the public. We have a lot more to do.
Brilliant. Well, I will put links in the show notes to your book and your website, theemfguy.com, and your Instagram account. Is there anywhere else besides what you've just said where I can send people who'd like to learn more about what we've talked about today?
No, I think that's it. And on my website, people can check out the ebook version of my book. Mm-hmm. And then if not, it can be on Amazon, including I think the closest to New Zealand would be Amazon. Probably .co.au, I think, for Australia. But it's on there. Yeah. There's a print version and Kindle and everything else is on all the Amazons in the world. Not my favorite place to be, but they're a good self-published option for me. So they've been serving me well. So I'm kind of, again, torn in between certain corporations I don't agree with. And then I still use them as a tool to spread the word about a topic that I feel is critical. So anyway, that world is complicated. What can I tell you?
It is. Yeah. Well, Nick, I've been looking forward to this discussion with you for a very long time and you have not disappointed. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your knowledge with us today.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Now, my final question for you to end on is if the entire world's knowledge was lost and you could only leave one sentence for future generations, what would it be?
Try to love more. Short and sweet. But yeah, I think it all comes down to that. It's a bit of something that came from a mentor of mine, Paul Check, and he has a different version, but he says, what would love do now? And that's an inspiration to me because sometimes I'm on the internet very angry at people who argue with me. And then I say, okay, what would love do now? Or how can I bring more love? And usually I have to stop the argument and be the bigger person or kind of stop just bringing confrontation or hatred. And it kind of guides my life. I try to, it calms me down whenever I think about this idea. So it's kind of very almost simplistic or kind of rose lens idea, but it works.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can join the discussions on our Facebook and Instagram pages. To hear more, subscribe for free on the podcast app on your smartphone. We are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and all of your favorite podcast platforms. If you would like to offer feedback or suggest a guest, email us at untaming.podcast@gmail.com.